The MMA on the Rocks podcast is intended for adult audiences. If you are not an adult, please do not let your parents know you're listening to this, and don't repeat anything you hear on this show in front of them. Also a reminder that even if you fight recklessly, please drink responsibly. Now that we have all that covered, let's start the show. Welcome to MMA on the Rocks. My name is Bill Welker. You are listening to episode 325 of the podcast. Unless you're joining live on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. If you want to catch the show live, subscribe on one or all of those channels. Turn on your notifications so you know when the show is live. Like right now, today is Saturday, August 12th. When was the last time you guys heard me record on a Saturday? I don't even know. It's been years. We are fresh off of UFC Vegas 78, Vicente Luque and Rafael Dos Anjos. The card ended at a reasonable hour tonight, so I decided, why not just jump on and get to the podcast while everything's still fresh on my mind? Although some of those prelims feel like they happened a week ago. The card was moving so fast in the beginning and then just kind of slammed on the brakes. Before we get to any of that, I have to talk about BKFC, which happened last night, BKFC 48 in Albuquerque, New Mexico. My buddy, who you probably heard on the show last week, J.R. Ridge, fought John Dodson for the inaugural flyweight championship. It didn't go his way. It was a first-round TKO loss for JR. Obviously, I'm upset for my buddy, but I know he's super resilient. It's not going to let him keep – it's not going to keep him down. He's going to bounce back and be back stronger for this one. I give him a lot of credit. I'm still super proud of him. You know, he laced up the shoes and got in there with one of the best fighters in the world. And it didn't go his way. And that's the way the fight game goes. But – you know, he's still a bad motherfucker. Got in there, boxed bare knuckle with a guy who had a ton of experience in combat sports. So congratulations to John Dodson. Keep your chin up, JR. And happy birthday, by the way. Today's his birthday. So hopefully he finds a way to enjoy the day. let's see. What else is going on before we get into these fights here? Wednesday was a bit of a muggy day. I took my daughter to see the new Ninja Turtles movie, which was okay. You know, I grew up on the Ninja Turtles, so to put out a new Ninja Turtles, there's a high bar for me. Because that was my whole childhood, was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movies and the TV show. But it was cool. It had like the animation was really neat. It had like a graphic novel feel to it. The story got a little wonky. The action was kind of cool. They kind of poke fun at the origin story a little bit. But like I say, every time I go to the movies, the important thing is my daughter enjoyed it. So there's that. So if you're looking to take the kiddos, I could say mine enjoyed it. And another reason I decided to do the podcast tonight is because on a rare occasion, the fight card wrapped up before 10:30 and wife and kiddo were already asleep. They fell asleep right before the main event, which is super rare. You know, usually you got to drag my kid to bed kicking and screaming because she never gets tired. I always say she's solar powered. Let's see what else. Nothing else, I guess. Let's talk about these fights, shall we? The main event, pretty much, I think, for the most part, went as expected in terms of these guys were very evenly matched. I did not expect Vicente Luque to grapple as much as he did. Where did he hit? 8 takedowns. And I know somewhere in the middle they said RDA's corner took his ankle sleeves off him because Luque was grabbing him to hit the takedowns. But at one point, Luque hit him with a lateral drop takedown. It wasn't even on the legs. So very impressed with Luque's grappling. I wouldn't credit his takedowns to ankle sleeves by any means. I don't think it even gives like, I guess it would give a little bit of an advantage, but you know, cause you're not grabbing onto a sweaty leg, but I don't know how much difference it would really make because a lot of times in MMA takedowns, you're not going for the ankles. You're not going for the like low single legs and stuff like that. But in any case, very impressed with Luque. I thought it was a close fight. I think I had it even going into the fifth. I don't know. How did you guys score it? I gave the first to RDA, the second to Luque. The third was really close, but I gave it to RDA. The fourth, I thought, was Luque's best round. And then the fifth, Luque won as well. But, I mean, RDA was right in there, man. Unfortunately, at like 38 or 39, whatever he is, this is probably going to be the end of any, you know, additional championships to add to his legacy. Let's see. Luque was ranked 10th going into this. And where is RDA? RDA wasn't even ranked going into this fight. So, yeah, I think the only chance RDA has at seeing another championship is if by some miracle the UFC opens up a 165-pound division and, you know, he gets like a big win off the bat. That he's one of those guys that would have been perfect for that division because he was a little too big for 55 and he's a little undersized for 70. That 15-pound gap is too much, especially because that's where most of your fighters are. That's the average size, you know, 165 pounds. That's like a pretty average male. In any case, what do you guys think is next for Luque? I know he's ranked ahead of him, but Vicente Luque and Kevin Holland would be a fun fight, in my opinion. I think maybe if Ian Garry can get past Neil Magny next weekend, then maybe Ian Garry and Vicente Luque would be a really interesting matchup. Let's see. I wouldn't give him to Rakhmonov. Luque and Bilal Muhammad would be fun, I think. In any case, I'm not surprised that Luque won, but I'm surprised that he won the way that he did. Because if you told me, if I didn't see the fight and you told me, oh yeah, the guy who won grappled a lot, I would have thought, oh, RDA won a decision. But no, not the case. Luque, you know, he's got some grappling, man. He's known for those strikes and those big knockouts, but he's got some submissions too. Submitted Michael Chiesa. But yeah, he's got those power punches. Let's never forget what he did to Mike Perry's nose, right? I'm drinking a strawberry watermelon seltzer here tonight. Wild night, I know. No booze for me this weekend. I had a touch of food poisoning that kind of crept up on me from, I don't know what it was from. That's the scary thing. You know, whenever you get food poisoning, you always try and retrace your steps and figure out what might have caused it. But in any case, I was up a lot of the night last night. you know, there's no disgusting details to share or anything, just a lot of like pain and cramping, nothing nothing gross. But needless to say, my body was not craving any alcohol today. So you guys are going to get me sober. So if you came here for over the top, under the influence, you're just going to get over the top and on the wagon for this week. But we'll be back on course next week, I assume. Let's see. The rest of this card was great. Let me clarify. The card that I was able to see was great because right around the start of the main card, ESPN Plus decided to just quit working. I know I'm not the only person that this happened to. I saw Mirab Davalishvili tweeting. Do we still call it tweeting? Was he Xing? Zixing? What are we calling it now? It's not Twitter anymore, right? In any case, he was tweeting at ESPN like, hey guys, I pay for this service and I'm looking for an illegal stream, which I thought was hilarious because I was doing the same thing. Yeah, it was down for like 2 hours. At first I thought it was just my internet, but then I texted a few other people. They said it wasn't working for them either. And then I was able to put on Disney Plus for my daughter. She wanted to watch Tangled, and that streams no problem. Same company. One works, one doesn't. I don't know why ESPN Plus is so fucking terrible when it comes to the MMA stuff, because granted, it's been a while since these issues have happened, but they've happened a lot. And I guarantee this shit's not happening during Major League Baseball games or during like the NBA playoffs. Like, why is it happening during UFC fight nights? It's crazy how often they have issues. Like, they got a lot of nerve charging people money for this service. I feel like every time it happens, you should get a month free or something, whatever it is. I don't even know how much I pay for it anymore. I know it was like $4 or $5 when it started, but I got to get like that Rocket Money or whatever. It tells you how much you're paying for subscriptions. Watch ESPN Plus is like $49 a month now, and I just haven't even been paying attention. I have no clue what it costs, but I can tell you that it's not worth it. It should be free. And I should be, I couldn't even put it on cable because I canceled cable. I don't watch TV anymore. You know what the only thing I watch is? ESPN Plus, when it works. In any case, rant over. Let's talk about Cub Swanson and Hakeem Dawodu in the co-main event. A lot of people thought this was a robbery, unanimous decision for Cub Swanson. I did not think it was a robbery. If I was scoring the fight, I probably would have scored it for Hakeem Dawodu. But I can see how Cub Swanson won. I scored the first round for Cub. I thought he looked better. I thought the stance switching was really throwing Dawodu off. And I thought Cub was landing a lot of clean shots and kind of stifling Dawodu a little bit. You know, Dawodu bullied him a couple of times, but overall, I thought Cub won the round. Obviously, Hakeem won the second round, opened up a cut on Cub Swanson. And then the third round, I thought, was close. I probably would have scored it like in that moment for Hakeem Dawodu, but you know, Cub got that takedown in the middle of the octagon right at the end, and was able to get to a dominant position. So, you know, I don't think it's out of this world that the decision went to him. What I do think is crazy is that there was one judge, and I don't know the name of the judge, who scored the second round for Cub Swanson. So this really should have been a split decision because that judge gave the first round to Hakeem Dawodu, gave the second round to Cub Swanson. That's ridiculous. I could see giving 1 and 3 to Cub, but definitely not the second round. You could see Cub Swanson was as surprised as anybody when the decision was announced. He was like shaking his head. And then, you know, Joe Martinez says, the pride of Palm Springs. And Cub was like, what? No. And you gotta love the honesty too, because Cormier asked him, like, did you think you did enough? And he was like, no, I didn't. We haven't seen that type of honesty in a post-fight interview since Joe Lauzon. I forget who he was fighting, but Joe Lauzon was like, no, I didn't win that fight. That guy should have won. Who was that against? It's gonna come to me as soon as the broadcast ends. But in any case, you gotta love the honesty from Cub Swanson. But I don't think it was a robbery by any means. I know the commentary team was very adamant because they had it in their heads that it was 2-0 going into the third. So even if Cub won that third round, he still would have lost the fight. But I thought he won the first round. So I don't think it was a crazy decision. The only thing I think was crazy was the one judge who gave him the second round. All right. Khalil Roundtree and Chris Daukaus. Man, I got to tell you, one of the most dangerous fighters, maybe in the history of the sport, is chip on his shoulder, Khalil Roundtree. When this guy feels like the deck is stacked against him, he is just so vicious. First round knockout of Chris Daukaus. He was doing a great job with the counter right hook every time Daukaus was throwing something, and he was really softening him up with that. And he hit him with a really hard one right before that finishing shot, that big left hand. And he kind of feinted the hook, which almost made Daukaus drop his defense a little bit. And then he just stepped into that left hand right down the pipe. And I say chip on his shoulder, Roundtree, because I feel like he takes things personally sometimes. And when he does that, he just fights with so much ferocity. And here you had Chris Daukaus, who kept getting knocked out at heavyweight. So he says, okay, I'm going to move down a weight class and try and pick a fight with a smaller guy. And Roundtree took that personal. It reminds me of the Michael Jordan documentary when he's like, and I took that personally. That's Khalil Roundtree, and that's a dangerous man, I feel like, when he's in that mindset. Now, I'm jumping to conclusions here. I don't know that he took it personally. I don't know that, it was even a factor for him going into this fight. Maybe he just thought this is just another dude. But for me, and for my perception of Khalil Roundtree throughout his career, when he feels like he's been wrongly made an underdog or something like that, that's when he's the most ferocious. And that's what we saw tonight. Let's see. Yasmin Lucindo submits Pollyanna Viana with an arm triangle choke. Very nice submission there. AJ Dobson defeats Stefan Chikwi with by unanimous decision. This was a catch weight because Chikwi missed weight, I believe. So it's good that Dobson was able to get the victory there. I remember, I think it was at the end of the first round, Dobson was like, he's a damn light heavyweight. Maybe it's the end of the second round. I think it was the end of the second round. He goes, he's a damn light heavyweight. Josh Fremd defeated Jamie Pickett, another catch weight. I don't know who missed weight there or what happened, but I also didn't get to see this fight because ESPN Plus wasn't working. Here's a monster of a man. Marcus McGee just obliterates JP Bayes. Just one shot, walk off, knockout. This guy is going to be a problem at bantamweight. Like his face, like he's one of these guys that just has like a muscular face. Let me show you a close up here. It's like it almost looks like he's like an animated like Marvel character or something. Like a human face is not supposed to be that muscular. So I would feel like, And the guy looks huge. I don't know how he makes 135 pounds. Like, this guy is all muscle. Like, just his face muscles look like they weigh 70 pounds. So, man, I would not want to get hit by this man. Second win in the UFC. Second finish in the UFC. Yeah, this dude, I say give him a ranked opponent now. Marcus McGee, the maniac. Let me see. Let's look at the bantamweight rankings here. Yeah, I'd say, I mean, yeah, maybe Chris Gutierrez, Adrian Yanez, Jonathan Martinez. I'd say he's ready. Like, let's just throw him in the deep end. This guy's a monster. Absolute monster. Terrence McKinney, another first round knockout over Mike Breeden. Mike Breeden looked like he didn't want to be in there. The first time Terrence McKinney touched him, he was basically in flight mode, it seemed like. McKinney stayed on him. I love the way he was changing up his strikes. He was going for the head kicks. He was changing levels. He was working the body. He was in on a takedown at one point. It looked like he was being a lot more patient. And still comes away with a knockout in a minute, 25 seconds. Super impressive performance from Terrence McKinney. And then when Cormier interviewed him, he's like, "I'm ready to go. Let's go, Boston." And Cormier said, "You ready to fight next week?" And then McKinney realized the Boston card was next week. He said, "Oh, never mind. I need a little bit more time, maybe like a month." But you gotta love it. I mean, the guy just fought, you know, what was it? 3 weeks ago, he fought Nazim Sadikov, got submitted. And it's not like it was a quick submission, wasn't it in the third round or something? So, you know, credit for him for jumping back in there so quick. Here's another guy, Isaac Dolgarian, made his UFC debut, I believe. Another first round TKO over Francis Marshall, who's a tough kid. Opened him wide open with an elbow. And Jason Herzog stepped in there, put an end to it. Dolgarian's going to be somebody to watch out for in this featherweight division. Martin Bude, first round submission win over Josh Parisian. And I think he submitted him just because he got tired of punching him in the face. He hit him with shots that would have knocked out, you know, half of the heavyweight division. And Parisian just like head down, wildly swinging back. It was a pretty crazy fight for as long as it lasted. So Bidet finally gets on top of him, grabs a Kimura, and you know, that was enough for Josh Parisian. He's like, I can take being punched in the face all night, but please don't crank on my shoulder. Let's see. Jacqueline Amorim. This was probably the most dominant performance of the whole night. TKO over Montserrat Ruiz. This fight could have been stopped on the stool after the second round. It was a 10-8 round in rounds one and two for Amorim. She just dominated Montserrat Ruiz. Basically pulled guard or like allowed herself to be taken down in both rounds and would just, or in all three rounds, and then would just sweep and beat the shit out of her. So finally, Chris Tognoni steps in 3 minutes, 41 seconds into the third round. But man, what a performance. And if you looked at these two girls side by side, Montserrat Ruiz has like the neck tattoo that goes like all the way up to her jawline. And she just looks like a tough, like feisty chick. And Jacqueline Amorim, does not. But man, when that cage door closes, she's a beast in there. Then we had Demond Blackshear getting the third ever twister submission in UFC history over Jose Johnson, 3 minutes, 47 seconds in round number one. The reason you don't see this submission very often is because it's pretty easy to defend. You basically just have to swim your arm, like kind of backstroke your arm out of it. But it is the kind of thing that once you're stuck in it, it's pretty bad. And this one in particular by Blackshear looked like he was really cranking on Johnson's neck. It wasn't so much the spine, but it looked like he was really pulling on his neck with this one. If you don't know what a twister submission is, it's basically locking down the leg and pulling the head in the opposite direction, which puts a lot of pressure on the spine. You can Google it if you want. You know, maybe I can do like a technique breakdown of it. For those of you who haven't seen, if you just listen to the podcast and you don't follow on social media, totally fine. I mean, I wish you would, but if you don't, that's okay. I've been posting some technique videos, some whiskey reviews, 1 minute whiskey reviews, things like that. I'm on TikTok now. I told you guys last week, but it was at the end of the show. I don't know how many people were still sticking around. So if you're on TikTok, come find me on there. And, you know, I'm trying to keep up with the times. So I'm the old guy on TikTok. I finally caved in and, you know, turned over all my information to China or whatever happens when you sign up for TikTok, whatever the rumor is. But I'm on there and I've been doing some grappling techniques, some Muay Thai techniques, you know, short bite-sized content, you know, some takedowns, some clinch moves, some wrestling, some jiu-jitsu, and a lot of whiskey stuff. So keep up with me there on social media. I've been trying to post a lot more. Let's see. Let's wrap up this card. Luana Santos with a TKO win over Juliana Miller. Another first round finish. This card actually tied the UFC's record for most first round finishes. So the prelims were nuts. Prelims were all finishes, right? Yeah. Prelims were all finishes and most of them in the first round. Only one of them was in the third round. That was the Jacqueline Amarim, but there could have been a first round finish there. I mean, she beat the shit out of Montserrat Ruiz. Great card. If you missed it, a lot of these fights were awesome. I'd say definitely go back and watch Marcus McGee. If you missed any of this, go back and watch Isaac Dalgarian, because he's going to be a great prospect going forward. Check out Damon Blackshear if you're curious about that twister submission. Great stuff. I don't know if you guys noticed, but when I'm not drinking, I actually get through this stuff a lot quicker. So here we're already on to next week. UFC 292 at the TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Aljamain Sterling and Sean O'Malley. There was a lot of like controversy about this because it was very weird how this came about, because Aljamain Sterling had the win over Henry Cejudo, and then it was just like announced that he would be fighting Sean O'Malley in Boston in August, and Aljamain wasn't really ready for that timeline, but they forced his hand, which is weird because he's the champion, but it's not weird because there's been friction between Aljamain and the organization. It was all just very strange. It was almost like Dana had a vendetta against him and wants O'Malley in there as the champion. Here's my thought on it, though. I think Aljamain Sterling could have fought Sean O'Malley the same night he fought Henry Cejudo and beat him. I mean, outside of like a flash knockout from a crazy strike. I don't see Sean O'Malley, like, I don't see a way for him to beat Aljamain Sterling. Aljamain is better everywhere. They're both unorthodox strikers. O'Malley has more knockout power, that's for sure. But in terms of mixed martial arts, like, Aljamain Sterling's wrestling is leagues above Sean O'Malley's. His jiu-jitsu is better. You know, it's a black belt compared to a purple belt. And not just any black belt. He's a Matt Serra black belt, which is pretty much as legit as it gets, because that's also a Renzo Gracie black belt. I mean, Aljo went up the rankings, you know, training with the Danaher guys in the Blue Basement and stuff like that. So his jiu-jitsu is super legit, super high level. I normally don't give predictions, but in terms of this fight, I don't see the fight going anywhere that Aljamain can't win. I think he's just the better all-around fighter. But at the same time, O'Malley is kind of an enigma, where he kind of wins fights sometimes that he shouldn't. You know, the Peter Yan fight is a good example. You know, he got outclassed by Peter Yan, but still came away with the decision. You know, there's something about him, the flashiness, the flair that he brings in there. He definitely shines when the lights are bright. He's one of those guys who may not be the most technically skilled in there, but for whatever reason, when the lights are on, he performs. So, man, I usually will never give predictions, because I don't want you guys like betting your hard earned money on stuff and then coming back and blaming me later. But yeah, I really don't see how Aljamain Sterling loses this fight. My buddy Jason, my fellow whiskey brother on the show. Thank you, my friend. He says, good assessments tonight, Bill. I appreciate that very much. Cheers to you. No whiskey tonight, because I'm getting over a little stomach ache. So it's just seltzer for me. All right, let's take a look at the rest of this card. The co-main event is interesting. Wiley Zhang against Amanda Lemos. So this is one of those things where Zhang is the better all-around fighter. I don't think anybody would deny that, but Lemos just has that finishing ability. She has that knockout power that women just don't have in this division. So she can change the course of this fight throughout 25 minutes with one punch. Whereas Zhang kind of has that ability, but she doesn't have the same mystique to her power. Hers is more like, she's very technical. She can land big strikes. Lemos just has that, I can shut your lights off when I want power. And that's what makes this fight interesting. She's also got some submissions, but, you know, Zhang's wrestling is super legit. She's come a long way there. So I don't know which way to go with this one. Also, Amanda Lemos, I think, is 36 years old, which, you know, for a female strawweight, you know, that's up there. That's up there. If you're a male heavyweight, you could start training MMA at 36 and still make it into the UFC. You could start training at 46 and still make it into Bellator as a heavyweight. But 36 as a strawweight female, you know, this is probably going to be her one shot. So let's see what happens. I would lean towards Wiley Zhang, but, you know, Lemos just has that kind of power that is such a wild card. Neil Magny stepping up on short notice to take on Ian Garry. I think this was supposed to be Jeff Neal in here against Ian Garry. This is an interesting fight. I think Ian Garry called out Magny after his last fight. You know, this dude is a star. But one thing that can derail a star is definitely Neil Magny. You know, Neil Magny is not a guy that you should expect to just topple over on your rise to success, because this dude is tried and tested in the sport of mixed martial arts. He's good everywhere. He finds ways to win. He's so experienced. You're not going to be able to, you're not going to show him anything he hasn't seen before. All that being said, Ian Garry seems to be like one of these special athletes. And we've even seen him face a little bit of adversity, but I don't know if he's seen as much adversity as Neil Magny is going to give him. You know, his last win was really impressive over Daniel Rodriguez. Yeah, I don't know. My gut says that Neil Magny plays spoiler here. But at the same time, Ian Garry is very, very good. You know, he could very well catch Neil Magny with something big, or even just kind of keep him. You know, Neil Magny is a big, long welterweight, but Ian Garry might be a little bigger, a little longer. He might be able to just keep him on the outside. Oh, here, and Jason agrees with me. Ian is good, but Magny is an upsetter. Yeah, I mean, Magny is one of these guys that, you want to call him a gatekeeper or journeyman or whatever, and then until you're standing in there with him and you realize, like, there's a reason this guy's been around as long as he has. Let's see. Mario Bautista no longer has an opponent here. He's fighting the ever elusive unknown fighter. So we'll see if they get somebody in there for him. He's probably hoping like somebody falls out of the main event. He gets in there and gets himself a title shot. Although probably wouldn't go to him. It would probably go to one of these guys, Marlon Vera and Pedro Munhoz. This is a great fight. This is a really great fight. I'm actually really looking forward to this one. So Marlon Vera is coming off of that loss to Corey Sandhagen. Pedro Munhoz coming off a win over Chris Gutierrez. But before that, he was having a rough go of it. Back-to-back losses to Jose Aldo and Dominic Cruz. This one will be interesting because whoever loses is going to get knocked way down, and whoever wins is going to be bumped like back up towards that top five. Then we have Chris Weidman quietly making his comeback after breaking his leg in half on the prelims against Brad Tavares. And I mean, I guess if you're Chris Weidman and you're going to come back, I like this matchup, but there's no reason to come back after that, man. I mean, Chris Weidman is a Hall of Famer already in my book. There's nothing else he needs to prove. I mean, if he needs to prove to himself that he can come back after snapping his leg in half in there, then power to him. And not only did he have that brutal injury, but then he had complications with the surgeries and infections and all kinds of stuff. So he's had to battle back so much. I would think he doesn't need to do this anymore. And man, after an injury like that, I would hate to see such a legend like Chris Weidman come in there and get hurt. But you know, he's got a lot of smart people around him, I'm sure. You know, they're giving him the green light. So who am I to say that he shouldn't be getting in there? You know, I wish him all the best. I think it is a good matchup for him, because Brad Tavares, you know, is a solid fighter, but, you know, has never been at the same level as a Chris Weidman. So, you know, prime Chris Weidman is better everywhere. Striking, power, speed, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, everything. But we're going to see how Chris Weidman recovering from a snapped leg is going to be. Let's see. Brad Katona also doesn't have an opponent. So why don't they just put Brad Katona and Mario Bautista together? Done. Man, matchmaking is such an easy job. All right. I'll take my check now, UFC. Thank you very much. And we've got Andre Petroski and Gerald Meerschaert. That should be a fun fight. Petroski is a beast, man. Andrea Lee and Natalia Silva, okay. And Marina Moroz against Karine Silva. All right. So we got two Silvas kicking off the card. I'm excited for this pay-per-view, guys. I think this is an awesome card. There's a lot of interesting matchups. I'm really intrigued by the main event and the co-main event. Ian Garry and Neil Magny. Marlon Vera and Pedro Munhoz. That's a great fight. I'm curious to see how Chris Weidman looks coming back off of that injury. Oh, we also got Gregory Rodriguez and Dennis Tallulah. And Austin Hubbard and Kurt Hollibaugh. This is an awesome card. And probably Brad Katona versus Mario Bautista. Who knows? I don't know if anybody from the UFC is listening, but if you are, I think I just solved a problem for you, and you're welcome. You're welcome. All right. If you want to grab some MMA on the Rocks merchandise, you can do so through our friends at Team Reaper. Reaper1.co is the website. I'll put the link in the show notes. As always, you can use the promo code MMARocks10. Save yourself 10% on your whole order. Pretty short episode this week. Glad I was able to get in here early. You know, it's been a lot of family time the last few weeks, and I haven't been able to even do it on Sundays. So it's been a lot of Monday and Tuesday night episodes the past few weeks, but we knocked it out early this week. So it was great talking to you guys. As always, I appreciate everybody who shares the podcast, everybody who puts comments on the videos or comments on Spotify, which I haven't figured out how to respond to yet, but I definitely see them because I have to approve them to be put up there, but I don't know how to answer you. But I see them all. I appreciate them all. All the feedback, all the criticism even, and everybody who's been watching the short form content on YouTube and Instagram and wherever else, TikTok. Like I said, I'm on TikTok at MMA on the Rocks. Come find me. I'm the old guy showing the fight techniques and drinking whiskey. Yeah, that's it. I don't think there was anything else. So until next time, cheers, everybody. Goodbye.